Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Do you enjoy hearing the tech news delivered by smart, informed people? Me too. Learn more about how you can support this show at dailytechnewsshow.com/support.
This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, June 19th. Happy Juneteenth, 2018 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
And from extremely tired and underslept Patrick Beja, I'm Patrick Beja. The baby didn't sleep well last night.
Oh, no.
Now that you're, you know, a few months in, how does never sleeping feel? Do you just get used to it or...
Usually, yes, but sometimes there's a particularly bad night and then you feel like you haven't slept. It's terrible.
A man who knows that pain all too well, producer Roger Chang.
Yes, it is something you adjust to.
Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
On Monday, the U.S. Office of Government Ethics, or the OGE, said anybody working for the executive branch of the U.S. government should disclose their cryptocurrency holdings. The OGE says cryptocurrency is property held for investment or the production of income instead of real currency or legal tender, and, quote, may create a conflict of interest for employees who own it.
Interesting. You know what's cool? Podcasts. I hear they're pretty big. Google launched a standalone podcast app for Android called Google Podcasts, which will use Google's algorithms to drive people to shows they might like based on their listening habits. Google discontinued Google Listen, another podcast app, back in 2012. But I guess podcasts are back.
Yay, they're back again. Hooray. Sydney, Australia biohacker Meow Ludo Disca Gamma Meow Meow, that is his name, was convicted for fare evasion because he embedded the RFID chip from his Opel Transit car into his hand. He appealed, and a district court judge ruled in his favor on Monday. Thanks to Chris for the tip-off on this. So I'm just going to dig the RFID chip out of my Opel card for the next time I go to Australia. Just stick it right in there in my hand.
Better luck next time, Disco Gamma Meow Meow. Really good name, though. But, you know, don't do that.
No, but he won.
Okay. That's fine.
Yay! There was some cheering that was supposed to happen. Let's do it again. Tom?
I just don't want him to get an infection. Anyway. Yeah. The Federal Court of Australia says that Apple must pay $9 million Australian dollars for denying refunds to users who received that Air 53, which bricked iPhones and iPads, that got repairs from third-party sellers instead of through Apple itself. Apple argued that Air 53 was a security measure to protect things like fingerprint sensors from exploits. The Australian Competition and Consumer Commission conducted an undercover operation in June 2017 where Apple employees said Apple wasn't responsible for fixing those phones repaired by an unauthorized third party. Apple now admits that was wrong.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about what it's going to be like in your hotel soon.
Well, Amazon introduced an invite-only hospitality version of its voice assistant designed for places like hotels and vacation rental spaces. Guests can order room service, request housekeeping, or adjust room control like lights and temperature using an Echo inside their rooms. Amazon says hotels are not given access to voice recordings of interactions and can't review the Echo's responses, and the requests are deleted from Amazon servers daily. Amazon also says that soon, quote unquote, users will be able to temporarily link their own Amazon account with Echoes so they can play their own music and their and other personal features. Marriott is Amazon's launch partner on the new platform and will integrate it at Marriott Westin St. Regis. Sorry, I don't
St. Regis.
Oh, it's St. Regis, of course. And Aloft locations.
I gotta say, the privacy issues aside, and of course, there are potential privacy issues, this is great, particularly if you're, you know, because it's we're all used to sort of like, oh, look, you can charge your iPhone, but now that charger is out of date, whatever. But if there's an Echo or another kind of speaker inside my hotel room, and I can link it to some music service that I like, where I don't have to play it out of the speakers of my laptop or something, that's great.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. What's really interesting to me is that you have a device that can maybe do those things with you. It's your smartphone. I understand it's not exactly the same thing, but it's kind of interesting that we're going from a personal device with which you do your computing to a ubiquitous kind of ambient, I think it's ambient computing, the official term. Mm-hmm. And it's getting really everywhere.
Well, the two things, right? The hotel doesn't know which smartphone platform you're on. And they want to maintain a platform that ties it into the, you know, the room cleaning and the room service and all of that. So having it installed in the room makes sense in that
case. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
It's probably the only time I use a regular old phone is in a hotel being like, hi, can I get breakfast? That sort of thing. So as long as the Echo is understanding you and they're understanding the Echo correctly, it's like that just takes out a whole step.
And they're addressing the privacy issue right out of the gate saying, look, if you don't trust Amazon, then you'll have a problem with this. But Amazon's going to manage all the data. Only aggregate data at all would be shared with the hotel just based on usage. They won't have any of your personal data. They'll delete your requests every day and they will automatically log you off once you check out. Question is, if any of that stuff doesn't happen, then that's a problem.
Tesla CEO Elon Musk, perhaps you've heard of him, sent an email to all employees on Monday that suggested there was a link from a factory fire recently to sabotage by an employee. This follows an email that Musk sent on Sunday to all employees alleging an employee had conducted, quote, quite extensive and damaging sabotage to the company's operations, including changing code to an internal product and exporting data to outsiders. Tesla is currently working to meet its goal of 5,000 Model 3s per week by the end of June. Obviously, that's been a challenge. Last week, the company laid off 9% of its workforce.
Yeah. This is a weird one, isn't it? I read the memo, and it's in very much in the voice of Elon Musk of like, hey, guys, you know, this isn't great, but apparently people don't want us to win, oil companies and stuff. on the other hand, I don't disbelieve him. So I think the only reason this is getting as much attention as it is because A, it's Elon Musk, and B, the Model 3 production problems. If sabotage is happening, that could really undermine the Model 3 production. And if Model 3 production doesn't hit the targets Elon Musk has promised, stockholders are going to be very upset.
How much of it is being weaponized by Elon Musk to take the attention off the layoffs and maybe the issues with production of the Model 3? I mean, I'm sure it actually happened.
It's an interesting thought, but it feels like it emphasizes the Model 3 production problems, not...
Yeah, but it's not his fault.
Yeah, but investors don't care. They're like, look, you can't keep your employees from sabotaging you. We're not going to be any happier than if you... You know, if you didn't hit the targets for some other way.
Yeah, I know the article I read from CNBC who had gotten the email from some employees. The employee or employees involved in either of these incidents were not named. There might be – that name might be public to some people. But yeah, I agree with you, Patrick. There's a little bit of me that's like, if you just say that somebody started a factory fire – then it's easier for you to say, we're trying really hard. Like our employees are going crazy, or maybe they're employed by a competitor and this is all some big conspiracy.
It creates a little bit of it puts them in the, challenger seat again. They're like, they don't want us to win. They're fighting us.
I don't know if that's going to work. I get what you guys are saying. No. I just don't.
Nah, probably.
IBM held two debates Monday between professional debaters and an IBM computer program called the IBM Debater, part of Project Debater. A lot of using of the word debater. They followed standard debate rules, meaning no awareness of the debate topic ahead of time for either the computer or the people. No pre-canned responses. Each side gave a 4-minute introductory speech, a 4-minute rebuttal to the other's arguments, and a 2-minute closing statement. So for the computer, it had to listen to the opening statement and then compose a rebuttal based on what was said. Topics were telemedicine and subsidizing space exploration. And The Verge's Dieter Bohn talked to the VP and lab director for IBM Research at Almaden, Jeff Welzer, and discovered that Project Debater will argue against a point directly if it feels confident its argument is right, but if it's less confident, it will instead make an argument that thinks it's convincing, that it thinks is convincing, even if it doesn't address the point.
Ooh, like a real human.
Exactly. IBM's system was designed to advance natural language understanding, so listening to the debate, and parsing information in a decision-making context. So it could be used in lots of places where you need help making a decision. Could be used in identifying frauds and scams and fake news and things like that.
It is super interesting. Well, first of all, even if it doesn't work super well, the fact that it's kind of being considered as a project that is acceptably coherent is mind-blowing already for someone who, you know, grew up in a world where we didn't have machine learning and functioning AIs or simile AIs. The video, though, I mean, they're not releasing, I think, I haven't found it, any footage of the debates, which I
love. Not of
love.
These two. They have some short right. video of a previous one that they did, I think, and in-house.
It's super short. Basically, you don't have a full argument of the computer, which I'm guessing means that it's not fully baked yet. It was really interesting. At some point, the rebuttal was about the fact that the other person was speaking really fast. So that's kind of unexpected, but we don't know how much of it is kind of canned or prepared.
None of it is supposed to be canned.
Not canned, but, you know, it's like there are a certain number of scenarios. Like, if you don't know what to say, then see if that
I see what you're saying. That might violate the rules, though, of the no pre-canned responses. I don't know.
Yeah, but I don't think the AI figured out, hey, that person is speaking really fast, so I should say that. Like, it's one of the parameters.
What if it did? Yeah.
Well, we don't know, but there isn't a lot of – we can't see the full debate, and I'm guessing that means it's not quite satisfactory yet. But still, very
– Or they just haven't posted it online yet because it was yesterday. that could be just as possible too.
Yeah, you know, there's some super technological solutions on the internet that allow you to post video live as it's being recorded.
Yeah, they did not live stream it. That's true. On to your story, Patrick.
Right. I was waiting for the introduction. Xiaomi has decided to delay its mainland China IPO until after its Hong Kong IPO. As a consequence, it has lowered its valuation to between US dollars 55 billion and 70 billion US dollars. The delay appears to be caused by a dispute between Xiaomi and Chinese regulators over the value of China depository receipts.
So this, you know, China's been working hard to try to get companies to issue their stock in China more often. This is not a good situation for them in that respect. But it also is not good for Xiaomi because it had said 70 billion would be its floor previously, and now it's had to revise that. That said, Patrick, you're the first person I know of our circle here who has been using an actual Xiaomi phone.
Yeah, I got the Xiaomi Mi A1, and it's a pretty cheap phone. It's under 200 euros here in Europe. Xiaomi just launched in France a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a month ago. And it's under 200 euros. You can even find it for 150. And honestly, I am kind of amazed by the quality of this phone. You think less than 200, it's probably 200 bucks in the US, less than 200, that's going to be a pretty crappy experience. Of course, the camera is not top notch. The screen is not super OLED or anything like that, but the screen is good. The camera is decent. It has a fingerprint reader. It's not super fast, but it runs every app I've thrown at it pretty well. Honestly, I would never, ever have guessed that for this price, you could get a phone that good, that quality. I'm completely amazed by this.
And now you understand the Xiaomi 6S, I guess.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that's been the experience. People are like, oh, I only have this much money. I guess I'll get this one. Wait a minute. This is almost as good as the much more expensive phones.
Yeah.
Well,
I would expect that kind of experience from a phone that's at least two, maybe three times that price.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Right now, on a special edition of Tools and Weapons, Brad Smith is sharing a vision for what Microsoft calls the new AI economy. It's an idea rooted in technological revolutions of the past, like the printing press, which created a vibrant marketplace of related innovations, ultimately leading to an explosion of books and readers. But he doesn't just give a history lesson. In the episode, Brad lays out the tangible ways that Microsoft is providing infrastructure and other support to those leading the charge of the new AI economy. And he explains the importance of using that infrastructure to ensure equitable access to AI to people all over the world. To stay current on insights from voices at the center of the conversation on AI, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you like to listen.
I'm glad you're amazed, Patrick, because I have another amazing story for you. Scientists published a paper in Nature Biomedical Engineering describing a trial at Oxford's John Radcliffe Hospital of robotic-assisted eye surgery. A Dutch firm's robot named Precise, kind of like eyes, E-Y-E-S, but precise, I don't know, conducted a procedure to remove a membrane from the back of an eye. The robo-surgery took 4 minutes and 55 seconds. Now that's compared to the 1 minute and 20 seconds that a human can conduct. However, the robot had, quote, equal or better efficacy. Also not really very far behind. Next step is to use the robot for precise and minimally traumatic delivery of gene therapy to the retina sometime in 2019.
Yeah, so I think if I'm reading this Oxford release right, the scientists are saying this was the first step in proving that precise can work. they took 12 people who needed this eye surgery, and they randomly assigned six of them to a manual procedure and six of them to the robotic procedure. And there was essentially no difference. One did take a little longer than the other, like you said. But what they want to do is prove that that's okay so that they can then go on to these more complicated surgeries where I think they expect there to be more benefit in using the robotic surgery assistance than not.
Right. And clearly, well, the idea is that there's more disparity in precision to the point where robots are just better at this. And you hear this in lots of, I mean, the eye surgery stuff is just mind-blowing to me, but MRIs, reading MRIs, it's like we're starting to get to a point where more and more doctors are saying, we could also like do other things. The robots are actually helping a lot.
And as you mentioned, it's not like autonomous robot. It doesn't go in and do the surgery by itself. It's basically an arm that is controlled by the doctor who does movements a little bit wider that are reduced by the robot with the needle inside the eye. This is kind of grossing me out, but
It's assisting.
So it's a lot more precise.
So that the doctor says, go here, and then the robot does it precisely where it's supposed to be.
Exactly. Yeah. And clearly the big, you know, piece of this news that is to be discussed is the name, but sadly we have run out of time. But precise is very clever.
We are precisely out of time. Hey, folks, if you want to... If you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to Daily Tech Headlines at dailytechheadlines.com. So, we mentioned at the end of the yesterday show, because we had a Canadian listener wrote in very excited about YouTube Premium, that Patrick Beja seemed to be very excited about YouTube Premium. YouTube Premium is the new name for YouTube Red, which gives you the original programming from YouTube. It gives you ad-free experience on YouTube, and it gives you YouTube Music. The big part of this launch is, of course, YouTube Music, which now has a free version with ads in the YouTube Music app. YouTube Music Premium, which is, if you're new, the same price as YouTube Red, but only gives you the music features. And then YouTube Premium, without the word music, will cost you a couple dollars more, unless you're already a YouTube Red subscriber, which you could only be if you're in the United States. Anyway, I think maybe the fact that we've had YouTube Red for a while, and for us it was just sort of a price increase, even though YouTube Red subscribers are grandfathered in without having to pay the increased price, we weren't as excited as you were, Patrick. What got you so excited about this?
Well, I mean, there's a number of things. First of all, the possibility of actually paying to get rid of ads on YouTube is very enticing to me, and I think many people... in outside the US, I use YouTube a lot, and ads have become, I get a minimum of one ad per video. Sometimes the video interrupts as well, because I watch long form very often. So the idea that I can get rid of them, I don't really want to use ad blockers for personal philosophical reasons. And this is a kind of not life-saving, but it's really exciting. The other thing is that YouTube Music used to be kind of a weird idea, because the way we thought about it, first of all, there were already competing music services on Google, and YouTube was used for music, but how would you do it with video? And I mean, it was just a strange concept. But this new service isn't just, you know, YouTube Red was kind of pricey if it was just to get rid of ads. But if you throw in a music subscription service, which is pretty decent, and the way they've solved the issue is giving you an app that is separate and that works just like any other music streaming app, but also includes video, it means that the YouTube Premium part of that subscription, if you are willing to go with their music service, is only a couple of bucks. So all in all, it becomes a package that is a little bit difficult to say no to, I think.
That definitely explains the difference, because YouTube Red, which was US only, gave you all those things you just said you like. It gave you YouTube Music, it gave you Google Play Music, it gave you ad-free, it gave you YouTube Red Originals. So that was $10 a month. Or if you are already a Google Play Music subscriber, you got it, because you were a Google Play Music subscriber. So where we're sitting is now there's this thing that's $10 a month that's only the music part of that. And they're going to get rid of Google Play Music eventually and just roll it into YouTube Music. So it almost feels like they're taking something away. And the old YouTube Premium, the old YouTube Red, is now called YouTube Premium and is $12 a month in the US. But it does all those things you're talking about: background listening for video, no ads on any video, the YouTube Originals, like the Karate Kid, the Cobra Kai series. So it's a classic example of, if you didn't have it, this looks great. And it's not confusing. Yeah. You're like, hey, there's a new product. It's free with ads, or it's music for this price, or it's music and videos for this price. Whereas we're like, hold on, this is confusing. So what happens to my YouTube Red and my Google Play Music? It's so funny.
And this kind of explains why they held off so long to bringing it out to outside the U.S. And because they were trying to solve that issue of how to do the music thing on YouTube right. And I don't know if you've used the YouTube Music app, but honestly, it's pretty good. It is almost divorced from YouTube. It's kind of a separate
music streaming app. Yeah, it just happens to do video really well, which makes sense. But it's a music app. Again, I don't use it because I am a Google Play Music subscriber and all my playlists and things haven't yet migrated over. Once they do, though, I definitely want to use that YouTube Music app because it's nicer.
Well, I think the other interesting thing is that YouTube is extremely popular, obviously. And I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, but I'm on Spotify. It's better because I have my playlist, blah, blah, blah. But if you're a YouTube user and you enjoy music, this offering with the premium version is kind of better than every other offering out there. I mean, some titles might be available somewhere and not somewhere else, but paying $10 somewhere else or $12 and having no ads on YouTube on top of your very good music service seems like a significant competitive advantage for YouTube.
Thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. The story was all over subreddit the last couple of weeks. Submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow. Patrick, we were also excited that you were on the show today because last Thursday we explained the link tax and upload filters that are being considered in the EU. Now, June 20th, the EU Parliament's Legal Affairs Committee will vote on both. They're known as Articles 11 and 13 of the Copyright Directive. We talked about it on Thursday, but you would actually be affected directly. Thoughts?
This is the audio representation of a facepalm. I mean, you know, GDPR was considered with a lot of suspicion from outside the EU. And I think recent events have shown that sometimes government action is warranted and necessary, even though, yes, it creates all of those annoying banners everywhere. Privacy is important. This might be an example of when government action is not only not warranted, but also maybe misguided. As you've explained on the show, these decisions seem to be not only catered to preserve the interests of a very specific group, but also to be ill-advised as policies because they don't seem to be able to achieve what they're setting out to achieve, and they're going to have some potentially pretty nasty side effects. So my reaction as a European is absolutely different from the one I had for GDPR, where I was kind of maybe not cheerleading, but at least thinking, yeah, this might be necessary. A lot of people in Europe are very concerned about all of this, and it might already be too late. So there's a lot of facepalming.
Yeah, that's that's consistent with most of the reactions that I've seen out there. And folks, if you want to know a little bit more about this issue, especially before the vote tomorrow, go back and listen to Thursday's show. That was from June 14th with Justin Robert Young, episode 3304. Let's check the mailbags here.
We'll keep the international theme going, at least for those of us in the U.S. Will from Sydney says, want to shed some light on the confusion around the Amazon Prime and discontinuation of the international store for Australians. This was on our show yesterday. Will links us to the global store on Amazon. He says, Amazon introduced what they call the global store that calculates the import duties for you, taxes, how many feeds you need to pay on your order, and then handles custom clearance on your behalf. And of course, if you're a Prime member, you get free shipping. I think the discontinuation of the American store was overblown. The global store didn't really get the attention that Will thinks it deserved. Will says, overall, it's a smart move by Amazon to unify the Australian shopping experience. It filters out items that can't be shipped anyway, and they take care of the sales tax. Also appears they're showing U.S. products in Australian dollars, although I'm not sure if that includes tax or not. Will says, I joined Prime, but I don't think I'll be ordering from the American store with our current exchange rate. Will also met Tom when Tom was in Sydney at the meetup.
Yeah, that was nice. Thanks for coming out to the meetups, Will. And thank you for explaining this. It sheds light on it in a way that now I understand, which was Amazon wanted to sound like it was mad because it was mad about the fact that the GST was going to be applied to items under $1,000 because it was targeted in a lot of ways at Amazon as being one of the big beneficiaries of the fact that you didn't have to pay the GST on imports under $1,000. But what they really did was say, okay, well, we can't just let people go to Amazon.com anymore because that's a nightmare for the tax collection. So let's route the store through the Australian store. And to avoid having even more tax issues or people getting very upset, we'll make access to that really attractive under Amazon Prime when we launch that, because then you get the free international shipping and that kind of helps make up for the, you know, the trouble of all of that. So this all becomes clear now. Thank you, Will.
And we got really thoughtful responses. So also special thanks to Nick and Murray wrote in with really good info on this topic as well. So keep it coming. Love the feedback and a lot of context.
Yeah, this is great when we get the clarification from the people on the ground who actually, you know, have to deal with this and know what they're talking about.
Speaking of being on the ground, actually, I don't know. Maybe you're in the clouds. Patrick Beja, thanks for being with us today.
I am in some sort of haze of tiredness. Does that count as a cloud?
Sure. I think that's a fog, if you will. You're in a fog. What's going on with you besides little sleep deprivation, but where can people keep up with what you're pushing through anyway?
You know what? Just check out Pixels, which is a gaming show. And the latest episode is a wrap up of E3, where we discussed everything that was announced, shown, our analysis, sentiment, all of that with our good friend Scott Johnson. Just search for Pixels on your podcast app and you'll find it. It's the one time of the year where you do want to listen to a gaming show, even if you're not a gamer. It's the best time for all of us gamers.
Excellent. Hey, thanks to everybody who supports us on Patreon. It is the main way we fund the show. And if you're a patron, you get the show not only commercial free, but with extra content through the RSS feed in the Patreon. So thank you to everybody who supports us. If you didn't realize that in your Patreon, go check that out. And if you'd like to have that extra content, go to patreon.com/DTNS.
Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We read them all. Keep them coming. We're also live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. If you can join us, excellent. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back tomorrow with Scott Johnson. Talk to you then.
Bye.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation,
partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.